You're listening to the Children's Hour. We're learning about snow leopards with Marissa Naranjan. She's the deputy director of the Snow Leopard Trust, and the kids have a lot of questions.
Exactly how big are snow leopards?
That's a great question, too. So snow leopards, they are a big cat, but they're kind of on the smaller end of the cats. They're not quite as big as like the tigers and the lions, but probably, you know, about around like 50 to 60 pounds, I would say. And the interesting thing about them, so even like 70-ish pounds, like their tail, remember, is 10 pounds of that. We talked about that. And their tail is the length of their entire body. So their body length and the tail length is usually about the same. So that's, they kind of double in length based on their tail. You might have learned this as well, but they are the only big cat that cannot roar. So like tigers roar and lions roar, but snow leopards can't roar. They make like a mew kind of yowl sound. And a lot of communities will say it sounds like somebody is crying in the mountains. So that's another reason they have their name of the Ghost of the Mountains. And that's part of why they have had that nickname, is because it sounds like somebody is crying in the mountains. And they're very elusive and hard to find. So that also helps with that nickname.
When does the mama snow leopard let the baby snow leopard live by itself?
Snow leopards are solitary cats, so they don't travel in packs. The only time, if you ever see a snow leopard on video with more than one cat, it's a mama and her cubs. And so they will travel and stay together for about 2 years, sometimes a little over 2 years. And in that 2 years, they learn everything that they're going to need to learn about snow leopards. And then they leave their mom and they go to live their lives in the mountains as well. And so this is something before we knew, we kind of thought based on other cats as well. But because we've seen these trap cameras of these cats walking together, and then we see them on camera without their mother and living on their own, we're able to confirm that now with science. And so, yeah, about 2 to 3 years, and then they live on their own.
You know, all of us love our cats who have cats. And when we see things like snow leopards, we can't help but envision our own little kitty cats. And so as a result, it makes us think, can we pet snow leopards? Is there ever a chance to like snuggle a snow leopard, or would that be a terrible idea?
Very tempting. And I totally understand that desire, but it is not a good idea because they are wild animals. And so, you know, in science, we do have to interact with a snow leopard. For instance, putting on that GPS collar would take very good care to care for the wild snow leopards and then let them be in the wild. But even though they're cute and cuddly, and there has never actually been a documented snow leopard human attack, they are still cats that I would give them space.
Wait, there's never been a record of a snow leopard hurting a person?
No, they're pretty shy and docile. Sometimes there'll be reports of that, but it's usually a clouded leopard, which shares the snow leopard habitat. They look kind of similar, but they're different species. And they can tend to be a little bit more aggressive. But snow leopards are pretty. If you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone. But again, respecting that space in the wild, it's something I would never want to be, you know, in front of a wild snow leopard necessarily in that way, aside from afar, maybe admiring. But yes, snow leopards are, they're pretty docile cats as far as the big cats go in the wild.
Well, there must be a benefit to the environment by having snow leopards be, I would presume, an apex predator. They must really help the mountains, like in terms of thinning, as they say, herds of animals that might get too big and the mountains might not be able to sustain them. And so there's probably a very important role they play in the balance of the mountain ecology. Is that true?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Absolutely. So it's just about learning about that balance, right? And threading that balance through the need for community survival. And how do you balance the two? Which I think is a really important question. That's what, you know, our organization tries to address. It's a learning process. And what works for one community might not work for another. So, you know, it's about learning and growing within each community that we work with.
That organization is the Snow Leopard Trust, and we've got links and more posted to childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Tigers and Snow Leopards. And we wanted you to hear a little bit about what those communities might sound like when they're singing. This is called The Mountains of Tuva. This is done as a traditional song using traditional overtone singing. You're listening to the Children's Hour. More coming up right after this. Overtone singing, Dun Tuvan style, right here on the Children's Hour. We are learning about snow leopards with Marissa Naranjan from the Snow Leopard Trust. Illy, let's go to you.
Are snow leopards doing better? Or are they more endangered?
You know, it's interesting. It's one of those things. So the Snow Leopard Trust, which you might have learned about already, has been around for 40 years. So we were founded in 1981 by a woman named Helen Freeman, who worked at the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle and became really inspired and wanted to protect snow leopards in the wild. So she founded the Snow Leopard Trust really just on her own with an intern, and then built a board of directors and had more volunteers. And so I like to say that because she's such a shining example to me of how one person can truly make an impact, and how by you being here and by sharing what you've learned really helps protect the species. I think this is something, even being around for 40 years, it's something that we're still learning a lot. Like, we are just now kind of doing this range-wide population assessment to really figure out what are the population numbers, first of all, and then doing monitoring to assess, are they improving? Are they growing? You know, what else have we learned about snow leopards? So what I will say is that, you know, by the community work, where the communities are just so incredible and so resilient and, you know, really becoming on board to commit to protecting this species, I feel like, you know, there, like I said, there is hope. And I think we are learning more every day. And thanks to the support that we are receiving and the scientific advancements that are happening, that we will know a lot more in the next 40 years than we do now. And so I would say right now, like, we're still learning to see if population numbers are going up or are they holding steady. But in the places that we are working, we're seeing, you know, populations are still there. And that's really important.
How can we help scientists learn more about snow leopards?
You know, just by learning and talking about snow leopards, they have gotten more press recently. So there's been some documentaries about snow leopards. I know there was an Apple software that had an operation system called the Snow Leopard. We got a lot of website traffic during that time by accident. I think people just searching snow leopard and we would pop up. So I think, you know, learning and talking about snow leopards really, really helps get public thinking about it and wanting to learn more. And then they tell other people. And really the power of that information and knowledge really helps, I think, get people interested, which helps drive that science forward. And I think as you learn, maybe you'll be the next snow leopard biologist that will be the expert in these cats and will be able to learn more and share more with the world as well.
Why should we care about snow leopards?
It's a great question. I think the snow leopard is just such an iconic species. I think it's something that, like you said, it's an apex predator. It's so important to the areas that it works. And it's true, like, why do you protect something you can never see? You know, might be other question, how and why? And I think for me personally, I know once, like, when I had the amazing opportunity to go to the base camp in 2008 and help them break it down. And it was the first time we had ever done the trap camera work in this area. So we went to collect the cameras. We came down. It was late at night. There was a generator to get power. And we had a little laptop that was going. We put in the SIM card for the photos. We're looking. And there's a picture of a goat and a rabbit and grass and goat, rabbit, grass. And then we get to the final photo and it's a snow leopard. And I will tell you, like, everybody just started crying, jumping up and down. Like, you know, it was such an incredible moment. And the timestamp, you know, it was about 6 hours before we had collected that camera. And so I think that I always say, like, it was in the snow leopard's footsteps, and that's probably as close as I will ever get. But that feeling of, you know, snow leopards are here, like, you know, that this work matters and that they will be here for generations to come. And that moment just really cemented that, you know, this is a worthwhile effort that takes a whole community, including everybody listening here today. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about this species that is rarely seen and bring it into focus with you all. So thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you so much, Marissa, for being with us on the Children's Hour. We've learned a lot from you, and you can learn a lot more. Go to childrenshour.org and look for this episode, and you'll find lots of links and more information, including how you can find snow leopards in photos and be like a researcher. Thank you so much, Marissa, for being with us on the Children's Hour. We've really had fun with you.
Thank you for inviting me. Wonderful questions, everybody. The best audience. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Jim Stoltz.
Now, when I was a babe, just a botany high, how I loved all the worms and the butterflies, and I felt the need just to cough of the weeds, talking to the critters, all the bugs and the bees, and mom says, "Dad, what's with this kid?" Dad says, "Mom, don't flip your lid, it's just his style. He's a kid for the wild." Yeah, as I grew, well, I hit the woods, cause walking out there made me feel so good. Just to be me, you know, it felt so free. I could run or hear the go climb a tree. And I watched the deer and I chased the rabbits and the chipmunks too, and I learned their habits. Mom said to Dad, "I'm afraid he's weird." And Dad said to Mom, "Oh, I think it's clear, it's just his style. He's a kid for the wild."
The Children's Hour is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico nonprofit.
You can find photos, links, learn-along guides, and more about us at childrenshour.org.
Today's episode was written and produced by me, Katie Stone, with production help from Christina Stella, Sarah Gabrielli, and Daniel Lentz. You can find our playlist, links, and lots more information at childrenshour.org. Look for tigers and snow leopards.
Find our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to our patreon.com/thechildrenshour.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the Children's Hour podcast.
Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow.
The Children's Hour is distributed by Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.